Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Gives it back for three.
Got it.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Welcome back to another righteous edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND. I'm Leo Stauder, your sports director here at WZND. And once again, we're back in triple threat formation here with Joey Dwyer, WZND's assistant production director and the El Presidente of the Acapella group.
Yeah, what's going on with the assistant
talk
over there?
Your little assistant.
I'm no Andrew Evola. Let's get that straight right now. You're all talking to the director of production. Leo's trying to make me look bad in front of all my fans.
Glad we were able to clear that up in front of the fans. And our other voice is Joe Kennedy, our producer and WZND's director of vibes and morale.
Yeah, I always got to bring the good vibes. Brought him in today, you know, feeling a little down. But, hey, today's going to be a great day. We got a lot to talk about, too, as well, with an ISU and then in the pros, too.
I know, and it is great to be back here at 6 o'clock, our first regular show of the semester. Well, it was good to be back last week before the basketball game. It just threw everything a little bit off. Now we're back in routine. We were able to go through our pregame traditions, rituals, and now we're good to go here.
Yep. Pregame rituals of hitting the foul hall vending machines and buying some snacks.
That was dinner, so yeah, that was good.
Yeah, you're
it was a
dinner.
little picked over. One of the drawbacks, for sure, of being online for the first 2 weeks is the fact that they really haven't taken the care to restock those vending machines. So we had the
slim picking.
We had the choice between like the mesquite barbecue Lays and like those like Fritos Twists. Mm-hmm. So it was slim picking for me and Leo up there.
I mean, listen, if anybody in facilities is listening here, Joey and I probably do account for most of the revenue from the vending
machine. Honestly, we clean that out.
Like you clean that out all the time. You guys are always going up there. I'm like, eh.
No, if you put original
once a week, or you guys are once a day, or
original Lays up in there, they're gone in 3 days. I promise you. Yeah. I promise you. I will bring in that revenue. It's worth restocking.
Mm. So that all 14 of our listeners have changed the channel to something more appealing. Let's get into what we're going to discuss on the show this week. We're going to start things off with some Redbird basketball, men's and women's, because both have had some pretty big weeks. We're going to move things into the NFL playoffs, recapping Super Wild Card Weekend and moving into the upcoming slate. Then Braden Bylak's going to join the show. We're going to be talking about the red hot Chicago Bulls, and we'll wrap things up with our college basketball picks with the three up, three down. So let's get into it, guys, here with the men's basketball team, because it was a tale of two teams their last two games, with the Bradley win on Sunday and then the Missouri State loss last night. Bradley, if you were to think that this was the team turning the corner, I could agree with you there, because they overcame a 20-point deficit, had a monster second half to win, beat their I-74 rival, but then last night losing the 15 points to Missouri State, a team they beat earlier in the year, it feels like that might have unraveled some of that momentum. So which of these two games is more indicative of where the Redbirds are as a team?
I don't think either of them has more, you know, authority on what the team is going to look like down the stretch than the other. I think this is what we've been saying week in and week out about this team. It's about consistency. And this is a young team that just has not been able to find a consistent footing. Like, they'll have the games against Bradley where they have this really impressive comeback again, or in front of the home fans. It's a great moment against the rival. And then the game against Missouri State where they get absolutely shellacked. And like in the post-game press conference, Coach Mueller did not sound happy with the way that the team played. And I can't blame him, because it's such a weird dichotomy between the team that wins and the team that loses.
Yeah.
And because we see these flashes of these guys who are really, really good, and then it just falls apart.
And in the Missouri State game, that game could have been even more. I mean, Isaiah Mosley, he only played 18 minutes in this game, and he pulled up the game-high 24 points because he was in foul trouble throughout the game. So, I mean, if he was able to stay in the game throughout the whole entire thing, like, this could have been even worse. But you also got to look at the Redbirds did take them down at home about like a month ago, beginning
back
of the Missouri
summer,
Valley.
Yeah,
beginning of Missouri Valley Conference play. And even, like, over the I know they've lost four of their last five, I believe. But, like, even looking back at that Drake game, I mean, they were in it for a majority of the game. And even taking a look at, like, the Valparaiso game, they lost in overtime. And then going back to that, the Wisconsin. So, I mean, these have been some, I guess, good losses. But that Missouri State game, like you were saying, Leo, and Coach Muller was saying, was probably their worst game.
I'd say one big takeaway from the Missouri State game was the fact that Mark Freeman put up 19 points and Howard Felling put up 10. Because these were two players that were hit hard by injuries. Howard injured his ankle in the Drake game, and Freeman missed a few with another injury.
Did Freeman play a Bradley game?
He did, but I was getting to that. He was limited by his injury.
Yeah.
And then Howard Fleming was just the conditioning wasn't quite there yet, so he couldn't go as long into that game as they wanted. So the fact that even though Antonio Reeves only put up 9 points, his first time being held to single digits all season, you were able to get Freeman and Fleming looking like the players that you expect them to be coming off of injuries. That's huge and could be something to build off of.
But that's where that whole consistency thing comes into play, because you have these guys who are coming up, Fleming and Mark Freeman. Both of them are, like you said, Leo, they're finding their footing. They're getting back from injury, getting back in shape. But then you have your guys like Antonio Reeves and Josiah Strong, who are the guys who have been producing. If they cannot produce, I'm not saying Antonio Reeves has to put up 25 points a night like he did against Bradley, but if he can put up 15 or if he can put up 17 to complement those other guys, that really changes the outlook of this team. But if you have an off night from him and an off night from Josiah Strong, even if those bench guys and those early rotation guys are stepping up and being those players that we think they can be, it still is fruitless because you're not getting enough offensive production.
And I think that's part of the argument we've had all season. One of maybe the criticisms of the Redbird basketball team is everything goes through Reeves. So if he doesn't produce, this team's really down on their luck. And we saw that he didn't get his numbers against Missouri State, and things, you know, you have to go to your second or your third options. And those guys did produce, in fairness. But if you're so reliant on Reeves, that's where you can run into trouble here.
And Reeves and then Josiah Strong, they're one of only two teams that they have in the whole entire country, two teams that have two players that have 50 or more three-point makes. So it's just interesting with that. And, like, I've been, like, thinking about this the past couple of days, too. Like, what would this team be like if Dusan Mihorčić and DJ Horn were here? Like, I mean, I just feel like those two guys, though, like, just didn't complement the team.
I will say about Mihorčić's role, I think it's kind of been filled by Kendall Lewis, who did a really good job in the Bradley game, locking down their top scorer, Terry Roberts. Dan Mueller made an adjustment at halftime, put Lewis on Roberts, and he locked him down, held him scoreless in the second half. Lewis has kind of shown he's got maybe better discipline defensively than our beloved Serbian Dusan Mihorčić had.
I agree.
He's more disciplined, can lock down defensively, so he's kind of a good asset to have.
Inside Chapman, too, coming in now, I mean, he's had a really great year. So, I mean, that, like, forward spot's been looking pretty solid for the Redbirds. It's just they don't, I don't know, the one area kind of, I guess, you're missing is that wing spot. But it just really kind of depends on the matchup you're playing every game in the Missouri Valley.
And this is a team that has the talent to be very successful in the Valley. They have the talent.
Yeah.
They have not shown that they can put it together cohesively.
No.
But I think the individuals on this team are good enough to be top four, top five in the Valley.
I'd say if this team maxes out, they're probably still, they're not going to be that top tier, that Loyola Drake team.
No.
But there's no reason they can't be on that tier
with
Missouri State last night.
Yeah.
I think that's a team, that's a benchmark that you want to be like them, a program like them, where they have some good upperclassmen, they have multiple players that could score upwards of 15 points. That was a team you want to see how you match up against, and they didn't exactly pass that check last night.
Yeah.
So I think this might not be a case of the Birds being who they thought they were, but it proved a lot about where they still need to go developmentally this year.
And now they're in a good spot, too, kind of with their schedule. They got two games in a row against Evansville on Friday and Sunday. And then on Wednesday next week, you come back home against Drake. I mean, Drake's one of the top programs in the conference. But having those two games against Evansville, I think
it's gonna help.
Hopefully, they can win both.
I mean, we won't pull any punches here, but Evansville is struggling this year. They're going through a tumultuous time in their program where they've gone through another coaching change. They're kind of senior heavy, but these seniors might not be the Division I type of player.
Yeah.
These are guys coming from JUCOs and whatnot that are just fillers. Like, they don't have any young talent. So these are two games you have to win for ISU.
Yeah, I will say, in Evansville's defense, I don't know if you guys watched the Gulf Coast Showcase where Evansville played against Rice.
I must miss that one.
Thrilling,
that one too.
Thrilling triple overtime, 109 to 104 defeat for Evansville. So I'm just saying they can play in some fun to watch games, but you're absolutely right where ISU should be able to take both of these with ease if like Leo said, we are who they think they are. And then when they come back to go up against Drake, maybe they'll have some momentum. But then you have Drake, UNI, and Loyola Chicago all in a row. That's a tough stretch.
Yeah. So to close out the Redbird recap here, let's pivot to the women's basketball team, because they're in action tonight taking on Southern Illinois, and they're off to a great start. Their best MVC start in program history. They're off to a 5-0 start. And I think the first point I want to hit is that this might be a different women's team than we've seen in recent years, yeah, because of their two dynamic forwards, as you'd say, Deanna Wilson and Katie Bowman. They have some size that they were maybe lacking severely in the past couple of seasons, but these aren't just big players. They can really get up and get those boards and points.
And it works so well because you have Mary Crompton and Juju Redmond, who are smaller guards, but they can score like crazy, man. But now you have, like you said, those two forwards in Wilson and Bowman, who in this last game against Loyola in their victory, they were the two leading scorers. Deanna Wilson had 25 points and Kate Bowman had 13. So they are just absolutely firing on all cylinders. They're playing super complimentary basketball. And this is what we wanted to see from the men's team. Get a couple players in who can fill some roles and then have a well-balanced offensive attack. And that's exactly what this women's team has.
And Kate Bowman was someone who worked her way on into the lineup last year as a true freshman, someone that Coach Gillespie was very high on. And we're kind of seeing how that paid off this year, how she kind of passed up some other players in the lineup, got some good looks off the bench, and is now a regular starter. In the Valparaiso game, she took that one over, had 15 points, 13 rebounds. To think that you kind of have that 1-2 punch at forward is just such a good luxury.
And last year, they didn't really quite have that. I mean, you had Deanna Wilson, who would come in at certain times, and she would do well. But I feel like over the offseason, both of them have improved, definitely. And it's going to be a tough week, though, for the Redbirds. They got two of the other best teams in the Missouri Valley, Southern Illinois, who's 3-1 in the conference, and then Missouri State, who's also 3-1 in the conference, both games on the road. So this is like a really good point to look at this Redbird team.
One of the only drawbacks that, and it's so hard to nitpick this team right now because they're playing so well, but I think one of the only things you could say that's a little worrying is the fact that Coach Gillespie is not going super deep into the bench. We've been seeing
it's like a 7-8 man, I feel.
And not even. It's like maybe 6 or 7 in most games, unless it's a big blowout. But like you see Kenzie Bowers, the freshman, coming in a lot. And then maybe Jasmine McInnes-Taylor. I'm just looking through right now.
I thought she would get more time.
Yeah, and then Kale Newland is sprinkled in there sometimes. But those are really the only three who you see coming off the bench in any sort of meaningful minutes. If all of these players can play upwards of 30 minutes a game, then it's not an issue.
But building off that, Joey, I think that's where we saw Coach Gillespie do some of her best work last year, was when she was going deep into her bench. That gave Missouri State fits in that two-game series we saw last year, how they just kept throwing different lineups, different combinations at them. The fact that last year the Redbirds were basically going 10 deep.
And like Lexi Kudelka hasn't really played much this year. I mean, she's only played one conference game so far as the Redbird, was a pretty important piece.
Obviously, in the times we live in, you have to worry about, we saw the men's team, how they dealt with injuries and COVID at the same time. So we don't have the full injury report, don't know exactly what's going on with the program. There are factors like that outside of basketball that go into it. But so I think that's just, it is a concerning point, because that's where Coach Gillespie's kind of made her keep, is by being able to incorporate lots of different players into her lineup, and she's not quite doing that this year.
But honestly, if it's working, it's working, right? And so
they're 5-0 in conference.
They're 5-0 in conference. We cannot complain. They are certainly one of the most fun teams to watch at ISU, period. And so if they are winning, bringing two players off the bench, keep winning. Don't let us talk you out of that. Like,
and at the non-conference two part of the year last semester, we were talking about it. Like, they weren't off to a good start. They lost six out of eight at the beginning of the season. So I mean, now to see them playing well in Missouri Valley Conference play definitely brings some momentum.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to the Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZMT.
Welcome back to the Red Zone on WZND. Leo Stauder, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kennedy back with you here. Guys, let's dive into it here. It's the NFL, next round of the playoffs, super wild card weekend. Might not have lived up to the hype we build it to. It didn't help where the game we said was going to be the best one, the Cardinals-Rams, was probably the biggest snooze. But it was still good to have playoff football, get to see some of these games, just get 1 week closer to the championship. And but there were some good matchups in there. It was just fun to have meaningful playoff football, and it always does. That first week is exciting.
Yeah, and it's always good to just see the teams that are playing in wild card weekend. I mean, only two teams had a bye, the Titans and the Packers. But just to see the two teams or the teams play in the weekend and see how they're going to match up together, because playoff football, it's a lot different than just regular season. So seeing some teams play a game last weekend, you can kind of get a good look in matchups this week.
So let's go right through it. We got four games coming up this weekend. We'll do a little bit. We said last week was our bonus pick six. This will be our pick four, pick whatever four. We want to call it, and just go through each of these four remaining matchups. So let's start with the first one, because this one I could see going either way. We have the Bengals at the Titans. The Titans coming off the bye. Bengals coming off their first playoff victory in 31 years. A lot of hype coming around them. Where do you guys think this one's going?
Go ahead, Joe.
Please. I think it's going to be interesting. Derrick Henry's coming back now, I think, for sure. So they're going to have to go against that. And the Bengals run defense, it's solid. It's a solid run defense. But Derrick Henry, like, he's just unstoppable. Like, when the Bengals are putting up, they allow a lot of rushing yards. And so when you have Derrick Henry out there, I don't know if that's going to be able to contain him.
But the thing with Derrick Henry is we don't know quite what we're going to get from him. How is he going to look coming off injury?
He's just such an athlete, though. Like,
yeah, I have no reservations about how I feel about Derrick Henry. I think he will... The way I feel about this game, I think this is going to be an offensive shootout, except one team is just running the ball. Because I think that there's no way for the Bengals to stop Derrick Henry. Their run defense is not at that point. And so it turns to, well, what are some of the other matchups? Will the Titans defense be able to stop Joe Burrow and that electric pass offense? And I think that they have a better chance of doing that than the Bengals have of stopping them. So I think that while the Bengals have been super fun to watch and they're this awesome, energetic team, I don't think that they're going to be able to, compete with the Titans. I think people, the Titans are the one seed. I still think people are sleeping on them.
They have a great defense.
Yeah. Their offense is set up super well. They've got weapons. And Ryan Tannehill is not that
year.
Bad.
He had a really
He's
good
not
year. 21 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. And they really had to go to him once Henry went down because their running game kind of went to nothing.
I think
right
this kind of showed left. What Ryan Tannehill is as a starter, that he's not just being carried by Derrick Henry, that he can
even
carry an offense
too.
On his own. Mm-hmm. But I think, Joe, you kind of outlined it where the Titans, with that run offense, they're going to be able to work the clock. They're going to take up time to score. And the problem, I think, for the Bengals isn't necessarily going to be can they score. It's going to be can they protect Joe Burrow, because he takes a lot of hits, takes a lot of sacks. So if the Titans defense can get at him aggressive, that might shift the scales towards them. So I think I'm still going with the Titans here, but the Bengals could put up a good fight.
Yeah, Titans, their defensive line too is also a little bit underlooked in linebacking corps. Harold Landry, Danico Autry, they each have over 9 sacks each, so they're going to be pressuring that Bengals offensive line. That's definitely one of the worst pass pro O-lines in the league. But the Bengals I'm still riding with the Bengals because I picked them before the playoffs all start and everything. I have them going. Go to the AFC Championship game. But I just think the Bengals have a good chance, though, with how many weapons they have on offense, even. Like CJ Uzuma, the tight end, like he had a pretty big weekend last week. And then also Joe Mixon, like you still have so many players.
They can score in a lot of different ways.
And 3 wide receivers that are young and super, super talented. But I'm just going to go with Bengals because I can't switch up with my pick, you know?
I appreciate that.
And I don't like sleeping on the Titans because, I mean, everyone is. I don't get that.
People just have this image in their brain of Miami Dolphins Ryan Tannehill, and I don't think that'll ever go away.
No, but he, to his credit, he has evolved. I think he's
He's so good. Like,
he might not be on the top tier quarterbacks, but he's still above average, I'd say.
No, absolutely. Like, if you're a team in any position that's outside of the playoffs right now, with a few exceptions, you would take Ryan Tannehill over your current situation.
Oh, yeah.
I think that there's very few teams that would.
So going from one team with a polarizing quarterback to another, let's get into the second matchup here. Another team coming off the bye, we have the San Francisco 49ers at the Green Bay Packers. So I could go either way on this game. I think this is going to be a very exciting one. I was really impressed by the Niners showing against the Cowboys. Their commitment to Jimmy Garoppolo, that's another player that I think a lot of people don't respect as much. Mm-hmm. He's not spectacular. He's going to throw some bad picks, but he can manage his way through a game.
He can make some good plays, and he's been like through this situation. He's been in the NFL championship game before. He's a quarterback that can get you to that place, but maybe not a quarterback that can win you the game, I would say. But with the 49ers, I think they're a team that matches up with the Packers very well. Yeah. Their running offense, I mean, the Packers' run D hasn't been that great, but they're also getting back Whitney Mercilus, their D lineman for Green Bay, and then one more guy, I believe, their defensive end as well. So, I mean, maybe that will change things. But I think the 49ers running game with Elijah Mitchell, now Deebo Samuel, it's just something that you really don't see a lot from teams in the NFL right now.
Yeah, the 49ers are so good at running the ball. And I'm going to be a Packers hater straight up. Like, this is not an unbiased take by me. I'm going to warn you guys right now. But, like, Whitney Merciless, I see on Twitter all these Packer fans are like, oh, we're getting Whitney Merciless back. We're getting Whitney Merciless. He played for the Texans.
Still, like, he was good for the Texans.
He was okay for the Texans.
Why? Clowney, that was a good defense. The Texans were good the past, before they've been terrible.
He's like a 6'8 outside linebacker. Like, he's really good in pass protection, pass defense. But other than that, like, he's just average. Like, the Packers are talking about it like he's some godsend. Like, obviously, I want the Packers to lose this game. There's no question about that. In my heart of hearts, I do not want them to win this game.
I think we all could agree.
I think they're going to. I don't think the Niners are at that level. I think Aaron Rodgers will cut them up on the defensive side of the ball. But, I would love to see the 49ers really take it to them.
And Fred Warner and Nick Bosa, those are their two best defensive players in the Niners. I believe right now they haven't said anything if they're going to be playing because both fell down to injury. So if those two are out, I just really don't see a chance.
I thought I heard that it was likely Bosa was going to play. Maybe that's just him wanting to play.
They also want to say that, too. They don't want to say they're not going to play.
Yeah. Smoke screens right now. And even though I did defend Garoppolo at the start of this, I think this is one of those games where it comes down to, even though the 49ers have so many great weapons, they have a very good head coach that can use those weapons creatively. The Packers have Aaron Rodgers. It's a home playoff game at Lambeau Field. I think this could be a tough matchup for the Packers, but I see a way as them prevailing.
Yeah, and you could say it's the 49ers. They have Aaron Rodgers' number, but all the teams that really beat Aaron Rodgers for the 49ers, it's just a completely different team on both sides of the ball. So, I mean, you can say that all you want, but
also,
I don't believe it.
Game time temperature in Green Bay is going to be hovering around 11 degrees.
Sources say that Blake Hornsby might be going to that game.
So I'm just saying, everybody says the weather is a big impact in Lambeau Field. So, I mean, hey, but Jimmy G's a good old Illinois boy, so he's used to it.
Yeah, that's fair. And let's go to the next game here because we got about 5 minutes left in the segment. Let's go to the L.A. Rams at the Tampa Bay Bucks. The Rams proved a lot on Monday night, but they're coming off a week of short rest against a Tom Brady-led team in the Bucks at home. I mean, I really like the Rams here, but are they the team that could take down the Bucks?
Hot take. If Tristan Wirfs isn't playing for Tampa, I think the Rams, maybe not blow them out, but I think they win comfortably.
Okay.
Just because the Rams, week four, I believe they played, they were pressuring Tom Brady more than anyone has this year, and that was with Tristan Wirfs, and that was also without before they got Von Miller. So now you add those two into the mix, those two situations, and I think that this team now matches up with Tampa Bay so good now, especially with Chris Godwin going out, AB, all that drama and everything. Yeah. And like Tristan Wirfs, one of the best tackles, one of their best offensive linemen, who's going to be going up against, or would be going up against Von Miller and then Leonard Floyd. Like, now you're going to have a backup tackle in there against some of the best pass defense in the league.
And I feel like the Rams were a team that came into the season with a lot of hype, and at times this year maybe didn't live up to it or were struggled to deal with expectations.
They got off that really good start, but like 7-1.
But on Monday against the Cardinals, they finally looked like that complete cohesive unit that we've been waiting for all year. We finally got to see Matthew Stafford play in the playoffs for a meaningful team.
And OBJ.
Yeah, exactly. Two guys that wasted some of their best years on some bad teams finally play for a good team. They looked scary.
I think something that's important to remember about the Bucks, though, is everybody's talking about, you know, like how Tom Brady's going to get pressured, all this stuff. People forget how good their defense is.
Yeah.
The Bucs have maybe the best defense in the entire league. And so if you're the Rams, you have a running back who's coming off of a torn Achilles who just came back last week, played his first game of the season, and that's your entire rushing attack. And the Bucs have definitively the best run D in the league. So you can only assume that the Rams are going to have a one-dimensional attack. And so, honestly, I don't know who's going to win this game.
Rams can run the ball.
But they got
Cam Akers back the past couple of weeks.
That's what I'm saying, but I don't think they're going to be able to. I seriously don't think the Rams are going to be able to run the ball.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be one-dimensional, and it's going to come down to Matt Stafford. And
the Bucs is going to be interesting, too, though. Leonard Fournette.
We've seen, though, with Stafford, you can take him out of Detroit. But
you can't
take the
Detroit
out of him. He's been prone to throwing up a three-interception game a couple times this season. So if the offense does go one-dimensional, that could be a scheme
problem. I love Matt Stafford, but I can't trust him.
Well, that's fair. And now let's go into our last game here because this could be a really good one. You got probably two of the top quarterbacks in the league going up against each other. The Buffalo Bills and Josh Allen at the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. I feel bad for Buffalo a little bit here because they finally got over the mountain last week. They finally beat the Patriots and did so in extraordinary fashion. And now they have a very tough matchup waiting for them in the second week.
Yeah,
I think the Bills are a good team. They could get through this. But Kansas City, even though they've struggled this year, they still kind of show that they can turn up that notch in the playoffs.
I don't think the Chiefs have had a game this season since, you know, they started, what, 2-3?
Three and four, something bad like that.
I don't think they've had a game that's really convinced me that they're back to 100%. And even this game against the Steelers, like, the Steelers were able to kind of hang in there for a while.
That's true.
And that the Steelers are a team who did not deserve to be in the playoffs. Like, if that would have been Chiefs Chargers, that would have been a way different game.
And this is like the first year where the Chiefs are kind of like Joey's saying, like, they're beatable. There's things that happen, like that one Bengals game they lost. How many? They won 7 or 8 in a row besides the Bengals, and they put up 3 points in the second half. I mean, so there's certain instances. And I'm looking at this game between Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. It's kind of like a situation where whoever wins this game might go to the NFL championship, and also whoever wins this game, I think, like, owns the league almost.
Yeah.
Like, Josh Allen, he's been a couple of losses to Mahomes, and Allen was talking about how Mahomes has done so much at a young age and that he just wants to do stuff like that. And I still think there's a chance, but the Chiefs still – like the Chiefs.
So let's talk about the Bills here a little bit, because I don't want to say it's make it or break it for them this year, but you're already starting to hear the rumblings that they've paid Josh Allen now. Now their coordinators are interviewing for head coaching jobs. You only have so many years to truly go for it. This might be, I don't want to say the end of their window, because obviously Josh Allen's a top talent, but with this current configuration of players and coaches, you kind of have to go all in this year.
I think you're absolutely right, because you've reached a point now where Stephon Diggs is in his prime. Like, that connection is only going to be there for a couple more years. The running back situation has kind of figured itself out. Singletary's been taking a lot more of the reps. And then the Bills really, like, the knock on them for the past few years was the defense wasn't where it needed to be. And they kind of just locked into a great defense, which I think is hilarious. They didn't really make any huge moves.
And without Tre'Davious White.
Exactly. Like, the guys that they had just got good and, like, stepped up, and they're having great years. So I think this is really going to be the Bills' year to make some noise. And I don't think the Chiefs have enough to stop them.
The secondary, I think, of the Bills has a pretty good safety duo. Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, each 5 interceptions this season. And a linebacker corps, I got Tremaine Edwards, one of the fastest linebackers in the league. But I just think the Chiefs still, both teams are going to, we have these two quarterbacks that are probably the two best in the league, but you're going to have to run the ball. And, like, I think it's going to come down who's going to be able to just simply run the ball and take away from their passing game, so they're able to be able to do both.
And it's going to be an exciting week, just staying on the couch, watching football all day, seeing what happens in these matchups. We only have a few more weeks of it left, so let's enjoy that. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're taking things to the hardwood. Braden Bielak's going to join the show to talk about the Chicago Bulls. That's coming up next on The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone. Leo Stoddard, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kennedy, and now we're joined by Braden Bielak for the first time on the show. Braden's another Naperville Central Redhawk joining the crew, so Joey and I are outnumbered here. So, Braden, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about what you're bringing to the table tonight?
Well, this is a really exciting Bulls team this year. Yeah. I don't think anyone was expecting it.
Not this good.
Players like Io are really stepping up and filling roles, especially with Patrick Williams being out, Crusoe being out for a little bit of time. The injury bug's kind of been all around the team this year.
Yeah.
And players like Io have really stepped up.
And now with, like, Lonzo Ball, too, going out with 6 to 8 weeks, that's what they said today, went down with a meniscus tear, I believe. So that's going to be a big miss for the Bulls defensively, too, as well as playmaking, because, I mean, we were struggling a little bit. The Bulls were struggling a little bit without Caruso out there, without Javonte Green out there as well. And now you take out Lonzo. It's good that Caruso is back and we can get some of that defense back into play, but it has been a little bit of a struggle recently.
And Caruso, losing him was kind of tough one, because he was kind of that Swiss Army knife type player where he can contribute in a lot of different ways. I think one of the big things about that's worrying about the Bulls with all these injuries and stuff right now is how good their chemistry was when they were all healthy. Because that was one of the biggest questions this year was, how's LaVine going to mesh with DeRozan or Vucevic? How's he going to handle maybe a decreased role? And everyone seemed to kind of have that buy-in. When they were 100%, it was all working. And now that you're taking pieces out, different guys have had to step up. But if you wonder how long can that be sustained, or if they do need some help.
I mean, Io DeSumo was shooting like 70% from beyond the arc in the past 5 games. There's some stat where he broke a NBA rookie record with, like, I think it's like 15, 5, and 5 over the course of five games and over 60% three-point
shooting. Like 90% the other night, like 21
and,
points. You know,
yeah,
it's
and
crazy.
It's been nice to see him step up, and like no one was expecting him.
Let's talk about that a little bit, Joe, because you're a huge Illinois basketball fan. Obviously, last year we were very high on Io in the tournament, and we said he was an NBA player, I think, but did you expect this much from him?
Not really. No, not right now. I mean, I feel like he was going to be a good player. I thought he could have been like a late first round pick and everything. He was projected that in a lot of mocks, and then every team passed up on him and fell right into the Bulls' lap. Hometown kid from Chicago, went to Morgan Park. So, I mean, it was like a perfect fit because the Bulls didn't have a first round pick that last year, and that was the only pick they had, and they completely hit because he started five games this year and everything, and you don't see that a lot from rookies, and let alone second round picks.
And so, obviously, going into the new year, the Bulls were kind of riding high. You had the back-to-back DeRozan buzzer beaters. They beat the Lakers. A lot was going right for them. In the past week, they've had two big losses to the Warriors, to the Nets. I'd say the ESPN Bulls are not as good as the TNT Bulls historically.
Even though the TNT Bulls did get blown out this week. Right. But, I mean, everyone was gone, and the Grizzlies were winning. They won like 10 games in a row before the game against the Bulls. So last night's game, though, against the Cavaliers, like that kind of felt like things were back to normal. Like that was such a fun game to watch. Lauri Markkanen revenge game for the Cavaliers. He put up 28 points. I was like, why are you doing that to us, Lauri?
But you kind of got a little ahead of where I was going with that, Joe, is maybe Braden, you could give your opinion here, is how much stock do you put into those two beatdowns to two good teams last week? I know there was a lot of injuries going on, but is that still something to worry about later in the season, that you finally got a measuring contest against the Warriors or the Nets, and they didn't quite rise to the occasion?
Yeah, I mean, the game against the Nets, Derrick Jones Jr. got injured like 30 seconds into the game. And I don't think a lot of people put stock into that because no one was guarding Durant after he was down. And you also didn't have Caruso, so he's your best defender.
Right.
But having Caruso back last night, really, I think it brought the team together.
Mm-hmm.
Because in October and December, the Bulls had like the 7th-ranked defense. And without him in December, they're like the 21st-ranked defense.
And so it's like, he's so valuable, We saw that with the Lakers, too, and everything. Like he was a big part of how they won an NBA championship, love it or not. Like, you need those type of guys that can just come off the bench and provide a spark right away, on especially the defensive side off the bench, too. And he still can. He's a good shooter as well.
I do just think there's something a little bit unnerving about not being able to be competitive against those teams, because those are the teams that you're going to have to beat come playoff time. The Nets first, obviously, but if the Bulls want to make a deep run, they're more than likely going to have either the Warriors or the Suns waiting for them in the NBA Finals. So it's good for this team that hasn't been together for a super long time to get experience against those types of really good teams that have that chemistry, to see what it's like, and then come playoff time kind of emulate that. But you're absolutely right, Kyle, oh my God. For some context, Braden's older brother, Kyle, ZND alum Braden, but, oh, that was brutal. I lost my train of thought. Something about how the Bulls are getting ready for the playoffs against these teams. I can't even remember.
Well, you're talking about the Nets, Joey, and the Bulls did already beat the Nets earlier on in the season. I mean, I don't think, Kyrie was playing at that point, though, and don't think Harden was out still. But you still have beaten some good teams, like even in the Western Conference. I believe the only team they're like completely swept by this year is the Warriors, but the Warriors are probably going to sweep a majority of teams in the NBA this year.
And so now we're about halfway through the year. The Bulls are dealing with some injuries. You know, we just had the Lonzo Ball news. Going towards the trade deadline, what do you think they need? Because I kind of talked about earlier, they had great team chemistry, so you kind of worry about taking somebody that's a regular contributor and trading them for someone who on paper might be a better fit for the team but might not have that chemistry. Where should they go at the trade deadline? Should they stand pat? Should they add to this team? What do you guys think?
I mean, there was talks about trading Kobe White for a power forward. I don't think they should. I think they should stay where they're at and just kind of,
I don't know.
Ride
because,
the
like,
season.
If they want to be that contender, though, and especially in the conference right now, like, they almost need like another 4 or 5, especially on the defensive side of the ball in the paint. Like Vucevic, he's not really a great defender in the post. And then you also don't really have a 4 that's like capable. I mean, Patrick Williams was going to be that guy and he's a great defender and everything. But now you're sitting here where you have all these good guards and like maybe you do trade them, but you also don't want to just give up on people either.
So then if you're going to trade somebody out to get that power forward, what is the thought process going on? Because Pat Will could still feasibly come back towards the end of the season.
He's going to pull a Schwarber and just come back.
Exactly.
In the playoffs and just go off.
Yeah, so his time frame is looking like he'll be able to come back and make a little bit of a playoff run. So if you trade for a guy like that, what's the end result? Because obviously he's tied into your future heavily.
The thing is, I remember I saw a month ago or whatever, Patrick Williams is another name that could be on a trade, like Williams and Coby White for DeMontis Sabonis. Sabonis is a two-time All-Star. And there's other players, Jeremy Grant on the Pistons right now, Miles Turner on the Pacers, even though I think he just went down with an injury.
Jeremy Grant would be awesome.
But if they were to trade for someone, it would seem they would have to get rid of a lot. Not a lot, but two
and
solid
young
players.
You have so much good youth on this team right now that doing a trade like that is such a risk, because you could look back in 3 years, be like, man, we made that trade, tried to make this run, but now you get rid of Patrick Williams, all of a sudden he's a perennial all-star, and you're kind of kicking yourself.
I mean, kind of to counter that, though, I think we've seen in the NBA, you can rebuild your core in the span of one offseason. That's kind of what the Bulls did this offseason.
Well, until this offseason, I guess, but before that.
So, yes, you could maybe miss out on a star in Patrick Williams, but if he helps you capitalize on this current core, you could find someone maybe in free agency, because the new management has made the Bulls an attractive option for where veteran players want to go. But that is such a risk reward thing, because we don't know what Pat Will is as a player yet, because he's so young. There's so much potential. So it's almost like, do you want to miss out on that potential, but maybe not get the bonus you need this year? It's a lot of risk that goes
into
it.
I
don't know
too, especially with injuries now that Lonzo Ball's out for 6 to 8 weeks, you probably don't want to trade Coby White, because you don't really have a lot of depth, at the point guard spot. I mean, Caruso can play there. Dosunmu can play there. But, yeah.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is it worth mortgaging your future for this season? How special of a group they are? Is this a year you want to go all in, or are they still maybe 1 year away?
I think this is a group where even if you want to make that run, your team is young enough to where you don't have to mortgage the future, because it's not like the window is closing super quickly on this team. There's nobody who's really getting up there in age, and especially
DeRozan is a little. He's having such a good year,
exactly,
MVP numbers, but he is getting up there a little bit in age, and not every person's like LeBron and they can just keep.
But
playing.
Still, you've seen that players in the modern era of the NBA can extend their careers and still be very productive and kind of be phased out of the lineup a little bit more slowly. So I think that you have a bigger window now than a lot of the teams who are kind of getting up there.
I'd say my only counter to that would be, this is the NBA, and like I was just saying, you could be turned into a contender overnight with super teams and whatnot, so you don't know who's going to come out into the future, where that next threat could be. So if this is a year you think you can go all in for it, you might kind of want to, because the Suns kind of did it last year. Nobody expected them, then they became this contender.
Mm-hmm.
The Bulls could easily do that this year. Not easily, but they could conceivably do that this year.
Yeah, the Suns, and then the team like the Bucks, a lot of injuries happened in the Eastern Conference. They got to the finals and everything. And also, they made a good trade for just getting P.J. Tucker, a guy who didn't even put up any points, really, in the playoffs. But he was a guy who you could put on KD and maybe hold KD for at least one or two games in a series. You're not going to stop him, but you might stop him not putting up 40 points every game if you find a defender like that. And, right now, the Bulls don't have that defender that can stop Embiid, that can stop KD, can stop Giannis in the Eastern Conference. So that's why I'm looking at, they do need to make a trade, because otherwise they have no chance to stop those guys.
I mean, I think the Bucks game tomorrow night is going to tell us a lot.
Yeah.
If we get blown out by 30, 40, then something needs to change, because we can't survive like that.
Now,
it's been weird, too, though, with LaVine now out and DeRozan was out before that, so they haven't really played a lot together, I think, over the past month, too. So it's been a little bit of a losing skid, but they can rebound once they get healthy again.
So talking about the injuries, the players they've been without for so long, this is what worries me a little bit, because I'd say, as most people know, I'm a White Sox fan, and the way the White Sox this season, they had so many injuries, and what they kind of did was waited for the team to get healthy and talked about that as their trade deadline moves, was getting Robert back or Eloy back. I worry a little bit, are the Bulls going to do that? Instead of giving up some capital to trade for somebody, they're just going to say, wait till we get our full team back. Wait till Lonzo comes back. Wait till Williams comes back.
Yeah.
I could see them doing that.
Maybe in the old ownership.
True.
I mean, now we got Arturas in here from Denver, and I mean, he just flipped things a complete 180 almost. I mean, started off with the draft and then all the offseason moves. He's been making the right moves over the past 6-8 months. So
I think that's the inspiring thing, is knowing that it seems like management's in good hands. They won't do something short-sighted like that and not capitalize on what could be a very special group this year.
Exactly.
So as we're getting we're running out of time, so one last thing. Just like in conclusion, are you guys happy with where the team is right now? Like with all this trade deadline talk, Braden, you said that it's going to be a prove it game against the Bucks. But as it sits right now, everybody's healthy. Are you guys happy with the team?
I am beyond happy because as of right now, they sit tied for first in the Eastern Conference with all the stuff that's been happening, the losing skid they've been on. And you also got to look at other teams that are going through it, like the Sixers are. What are they doing? They're wasting Joel Embiid. Ben Simmons hasn't played at all. Just trade him. Like, if they're able to trade him, then maybe Sixers, they're going to be a very tough team to beat. But I'm happy where the Bulls are at right now with everything that's going on, especially the past 2-3 weeks.
I mean, yeah, I think you have to be thrilled with this team because listen to one of the shows we did from preseason. Probably what we were saying was max, best case scenario, they're a 4 or a 5 seed.
Yeah.
And now as of January 20th, they're tied for first place in the Eastern Conference. So I think that's obviously a net positive. But I think just the most fun part has been just seeing all the different guys that have stepped up and how much fun this team genuinely seems to be having, that it has been a fun team to watch, that it seems like everybody likes each other, that these different personalities mesh together, that you get guys like Ayolosunmu coming out of nowhere and producing. I think that's what's made it so fun, is not only they're winning, but they're winning in a lot of different ways.
They were so bad to watch the past 4 or 5 years. It's like, it wasn't even like watchable. Now I find myself watching every single Bulls game. It's like, it just wasn't, it was not fun to really be a Bulls fan the past 4 or 5 years until this year.
No, and even like the back-to-back buzzer beaters by DeRozan, like you turn on SportsCenter and you can see Bulls highlights, not them just getting run up the score on, but they're the ones making the highlights. That's been what's fun to watch about this season.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll keep things on the hardwood for our next segment. When we come back, we're going to play a 3-up, 3-down college basketball pick 'em segment. That's coming up next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to the Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZND.
Going up, coming down.
It's the 3-up, 3-down.
3-up, 3-down.
Only on the Pulse of Redbird Nation. 103.3 WZND.
You heard the sound, or you know what time it is now? It's time for the 3-up, 3-down. Our weekly college basketball pick'em segment. Joey, why don't you tell the audience how it is we play this game and let them know what the standings are, because we kind of like those.
Yeah, I do like those right now. Okay, so the way this works is we're going to pick 3 favorites and 3 underdogs for this next week of college basketball action. One of our favorites can be over 80% according to ESPN's win probability, and one of them has to be a Missouri Valley Conference game. And the standings so far, it is a tough, tough go of it for Mr. Joe Kennedy behind the flipping the switches.
I always say bad. I don't care.
It's a 1-5 start for Mr. Kennedy. Then next up, we've got Steve Cease in fourth place at a respectable 3-2-1, had one game COVIDed. Our guest last week, Max, he went 4-2. And then me and Mr. Stoddard are sitting at a cool 6-0.
I mean, I don't know how it happened, but I'm trying to ride this all year. I don't think I'm going to pick one wrong for the rest of the season. Saying it right now.
I got
my picks wrong to get it over with, you know, in the first
Yeah,
week.
No, Joe, okay. Joe played it smart. Now Joe's going to go undefeated
first
the rest
on
of
waiver
the year.
Wires, too, yeah.
So I'll get things started with my first game here. We have this one. This one's coming up tonight. We got a great matchup here. We got McNeese going to visit Texas A&M CC, Corpus Christi campus. I'm going with the Islanders of Texas A&M CC. They're a 73.9% favorite. They're 14-4 on the season. Keep an eye on the Islanders this year.
I'm going to be going back to where I would go all the time last year. I'm going to be taking Gonzaga.
Play the hits.
Against San Francisco. Gonzaga's a 94%. And, I mean, they should win this game. I don't know when they're going to ever lose a conference game. So, I got the Zags.
Tonight, a game actually going on right now, I got the Indiana Hoosiers over the Purdue Boilermakers, and it's a tie game.
Ooh, and that's a good underdog pick. It's 24-24. Yeah. I'm not mad at it.
Purdue's looked human this past week or so.
My first pick, this is going to be my over 80%. We were talking about it in the office today, how magical Oral Roberts was last year in the tournament. So we're going with the Golden Eagles. They're taking on North Dakota tonight. That starts right when the show ends. They've got a 98.7% chance of winning.
Okay.
Those are good odds there, Joey. I'm going with an East Coast man. Or we, let's go with
Steve Cease's pick. Steve Cease's pick. No, don't worry about it. Steve Cease's first pick, his over 80. Murray State playing host to Eastern Illinois. Murray State's a 99.4% favorite. And that's who Steve Cease is riding.
Eastern's won like one game, I think, this year. So that's a good pick, Steve.
That's probably as close to a lock as you can get.
Good job, Steve.
Good job, Steve.
So as I went out of order there for my next pick, we're going East Coast. We got Iona at Quinnipiac. Iona is a 78.5% favorite, 15-3 on the year, 7-0 in the conference. So I'm going with the Gales of Iona here.
Over Quinnipiac. All right. I'm going to be killing to the Midwest here. Keep things in the Missouri Valley Conference, actually. I'm going to be going Evansville versus Illinois State, the game at Evansville. Illinois State's favorite, 59.9%. I'm going to take the Birds in that one, traveling down to Evansville.
I'm going to take it to Colorado to be underdogs against USC. They only have a 36.4% chance of winning, but that game's currently also going on right now. It's 10-8, Colorado.
Ooh, okay. That's another good game. Big Pac-12 matchup. My second pick, this is going to be my Missouri Valley matchup. And I hate to do it because I'm an ISU loyalist at heart, but I got to pick the Bradley Braves. They're a 70% favorite over the Southern Illinois Salukis. And so we're going to ride with Bradley. The only time you'll ever hear me say that.
Playing the strategy.
And Bradley just beat Drake, so I don't know what's going on with Bradley.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And then for Steve Cease, he's picking Missouri State over Indiana State. They're a 68.3% favorite, so that's his Missouri Valley Conference game. And hopefully he cashes on that one.
I'm going to keep things in the valley here. I'm going with ISU against Evansville, but I'm going with the home one where Illinois State's odds switch to 86.3%. And as we said during that first segment, Evansville, not very good. The Redbirds as heavy home favorites. That's who I'm riding with for my valley game.
Yeah, I like that one, but I didn't want to do my Missouri Valley and 80 at one
That's
time.
Fair.
You know? So I was just like, plus you never know with the Birds. So
I'm going to go. Ain't that the truth?
My next game, my last up, Oklahoma versus Baylor, where Baylor's a 66.8% favorite. I'm going to be taking Baylor in this one. Oklahoma's had some good games over the past couple of weeks. I mean, Big 12's one of the best conferences right now, but I think the Bears, the national champions, pull it off.
I'm going to take it back to Illinois State and Evansville and take the Birds in this one.
Ooh, okay. So everybody's taking the Birds except for me and
Which
Steve.
Which means they're going to, like, lay a massive egg against Evansville, lose both games.
It's going to be brutal. Okay, so my last favorite, I picked Iowa last week, and it worked for me.
Okay.
This time we're going with the Cyclones. They're taking on TCU, and Cyclones are projected to beat the Horned Frogs 72.9% that Saturday. I'm going with that one. Steve Cease's last game, Buffalo at Toledo, and he's going with the Rockets, 73% chance of winning for Toledo.
So for my first underdog, we're taking things to the Ivy League here because I've been watching this conference all year. Oh, yeah, big fan of those smart guys. Going at it, we got Princeton at Dartmouth. Dartmouth's a 49% favorite or underdog. And they are 4-11 in conference while Princeton's sitting in first place. But I watched the Princeton-Brown game last night. Princeton barely got out of their last-second free throws. They're beatable.
I told Leo before that I didn't even know he was picking that game. I told him that's a sucker's pick. That's a sucker's pick for the dog.
And for my first underdog, we go to the Atlantic 10. George Mason is hosting Dayton, where George Mason is a 54.5% favorite in this. I'm going to be taking the Dayton Flyers in this one. They've had a couple of good wins this year, including the one against Kansas. Long time ago, but I think this Dayton team is a young team, different team we've seen in the past 10 years, so I'm going to be going with Dayton.
This is my biggest upset. I got Tulsa over Cincinnati. They only have a 22.4% chance of winning, but Tulsa has their best player playing.
Okay, I'm with it. I'm with it for sure. My first upset pick, I've got Miami of Florida hosting Florida State, and I'm taking the Seminoles. They've got a 41% chance of winning. But I just like the Florida atmosphere in that one. Don't really know much about either teams. I usually stay north of this the Bible Belt. But hopefully the Seminoles pulled out for me. Steve Cease's first upset. He's taking Troy over UL Monroe.
All right.
Is that University of Louisiana Monroe?
Yep, it is.
Right? Okay, yeah. So Troy's got a 48.8% chance of winning. So good luck, Steve.
For my next underdog, I'm going with a game on Sunday. We got Youngstown State at Purdue Fort Wayne. Youngstown State's a 36.1% underdog, but they have some really good defensive metrics. So if they play some lockdown defense, they could pull off the win here, as both teams are 4-4 in conference. Could really be a good one.
And for my second underdog here, I'm going to go back to the Missouri Valley Conference, where Valparaiso will host Bradley. Valparaiso is a underdog in this one. Bradley favored it at 52.9%. And Velpo had a pretty big win the other night against UNI, who was off to a really good start in the conference. So I think that Velpo is going to keep things going in this one.
All right, I think I went a little bit out of order. My underdogs are done, but my favorite is going to be Arizona over Stanford. They have an 81.7% chance of winning.
Oh, that's an easy pick right there. My next underdog, and guys, you get to a point in the 3-up, 3-down when it gets monotonous looking at all these teams that you know nothing about. Yeah. So I pick teams that I know at least a little bit about. So I'm picking Long Beach State because that's where Joe Hampton went off the Last Chance U basketball.
Okay.
I'm picking Long Beach State to beat UC San Diego. 34.2% chance of winning, but I'm wrong at riding with the beach. It's the Long Beach State Beach. Oh. If I'm not mistaken. Somebody fact check me on that while I read Steve. Steve's picking Boise State to beat Utah State 45.2%.
So Joey talked about how his strategy was pick teams he knows a little bit about. I'm going with, in this next matchup, going with one of my favorite mascots in the country here. This is actually a good matchup game, mascot matchup here. We have the St. Peter's Peacocks, 43.7% underdogs against the Canisius Golden Griffins. I'm going with the Peacocks of St. Peter's here.
The Golden Griffins, you're sleeping on them?
Peacock, that's a cool mascot. Yeah. You don't really hear that one ever.
That is true. So for my last one, I'm going to be going with Cincinnati against Temple, where Temple's favored at 50.7%. But I'm going to be taking the Cincinnati Bearcats. A little disappointing year, a couple of good wins, and I think they just keep things going and rolling here against Temple.
My last favorite pick is Memphis over SMU, but that's only if DeAndre Williams, who is questionable comeback, comes back.
All right, so praying for Braden in that one. My last one, I've got St. Francis Brooklyn. Leo doubted him last week and it worked out for him, but I'm taking him this week to beat Fairleigh Dickinson. They've got a 48.4% chance of winning. Fairleigh Dickinson has won one game all season.
Ooh.
On the other side, UAB taking on Louisiana Tech. Steve's got Louisiana Tech at 44.3%.
So that's all we have for this week's show, but it was great to be back in the studio. We have just a few more shows left this year, so it's always great when we get to do them together. Joey's got something to add.
They are the Long Beach State Beach.
Oh, right. Great. Glad we cleared that up.
Just the beach.
The beach.
Just the beach.
And we started the show with talking about the Redbird recap, Illinois State basketball. We talked some NFL playoffs. Braden Bielak came on to the show, and we almost all got his name right and talked some Chicago Bulls. And we round things up with a 3-up, 3-down. We've got a great weekend of sports here at Illinois State. The men's basketball team takes on Evansville in retro night action tomorrow night at 5:50. Joe's going to have the call, so listen around
with
for
Brendan
that.
Brendan McInerney, yep.
If you missed any part of tonight's show, you can catch it on podcast form on our website. So for Joe Kennedy, Joey Dwyer, Braden Bielak, this is Leo Stodhurst saying thank you for listening and tune in next week.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.